It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Todd Gabler showed up to testify 6 weeks after neck fusion surgery. You walked in with a cane, you had the big neck brace on, told the judge that you even skipped your pain medication so your mind would be clear. We all saw that and we're like, bravo, this man is here with a mission and he has a purpose to be here. Joining the conversation to discuss all this, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program. And of course, our guest, Todd Gabler, is with us. Todd, just in your own words, obviously you made it happen to be there. As concise as you can be about it, why was it so important for you to be there that day and have your voice heard and have your findings be heard in front of that jury?
Well, you know, the spinal cord injury that I had was severe. It needed to be corrected. And for me to be able to walk and feel things in my hands and feet, the recovery from that surgery is 52 weeks, so a year.
Yeah.
And traveling in an airplane was excruciating.
Yeah.
But this is not the kind of case that I was willing to phone in or Zoom from. The seriousness of this case, the over 900 hours of investigation that I had in this case, I did not believe that that was appropriate for me to simply Zoom call it in. There, we live in a world today that is this, what we're doing right now, right here.
Yeah.
But that is not appropriate for a trial. There are things that happen in real time inside that courtroom that I would not be able to respond to or understand. And so for some things, this type of interaction is appropriate. Mm-hmm. For a trial about where a life hangs in the balance, it's just not appropriate to appear telephonically.
Sure.
You know, Todd, nice to meet you. Great to be here with you. I was just listening on the last segment, and your knowledge of human beings is really high level, profound. I mean, it's obvious you've been doing this for a very, very long time. You've been studying people a long time. You nailed the homicidal psychopath really, really well. I mean, and yeah, people shouldn't be as afraid to say it. And clinicians want to weigh in, okay, homicidal with psychopathic observed traits, okay, for the clinicians out there. People like Corey Richards, and I know some psychopaths that actually clinically diagnosed that actually took the time to get diagnosed, their awareness of it, and so they do things in their life to mitigate those things, and so they have a self-awareness, which is very rare. And like you said, they are all around us, and not all of them manifest like Corey did. Who apparently does not have any level of self-awareness at all, but you have a high level. And since, where did you think that came from? You know, so at what point, what was that spark to become who you were, to actually do that deep dive, to become the person in the courtroom that they needed to actually bring this to closure?
Well, as to personality traits, I will confess that I am an empathetic personality. I very much am interested in how people feel, how they respond, what their motivations are. And I think this is exceptionally helpful in interviewing all people of all personality types. You need to acknowledge people, make sure that they feel understood so that they will open up to you and talk to you about things that are sometimes very painful. There's a lot of trauma in the job that I did. And in order to unlock memories about that trauma, you've got to empathize with people so that they trust you with that exceptionally traumatic memory. So that has been a practice in my interviewing techniques over the years. And I also have experience with narcissistic, certainly severe narcissism in my own personal life. I slept next to a severe narcissist for many years and experienced the lying and the cheating and the stealing. And what it allows me to do is recognize those clues for what they are. And in particular, I think that the record reflects, I didn't know Eric Richens, but I think what I learned was that he was very much an empathetic personality. And this is the type of person that a Corey will prey upon.
Yes.
We all saw Josh Grossman on the stand. Empathetic personality? Probably.
Yeah.
Probably. And she preys upon that type of person.
Yeah, that's what they do.
We saw Greg Hall, her friend, talk at the sentencing. Greg Hall is the definition of an empathetic personality. And Corey preys upon that type of personality to get what she wants.
You spent a long time going through the devices, through Eric's devices and such, and obviously you never met him, but you almost kind of got to meet his ghost in a certain way, if you will. After spending all that time pouring through the messages, seeing the interactions between him and Corey, obviously he's an empathetic person, but what else did you learn about Eric? How was that relationship? Who was he in relation to her? How was he as a husband swimming in the same pool with that shark that is Corey Richens? How did he navigate those waters from what you saw?
Yeah, this is a difficult and complex question. And people often ask, why would Eric go back there? Why would he go back into this abusive relationship and not simply divorce her and take the kids? Well, first of all, a divorce involves custody, 50-50 arrangements. And so that's an easy answer.
Yep.
The more complicated answer is the complex nature of a narcissist, a psychopath. There's a lot of overlap there, and it's a very complicated thing to try and untangle. But the important note here is that there are, in the empathetic personality dynamic with a psychopath or a narcissist, you are constantly looking for the good. You're constantly looking for the savable, the salvageable. You're trying to ignore the narcissistic, all of those traits that we've talked about. You're trying to discount those, and you're trying to find the good in people. And I've said before in my own case, I've always been able to find humanity in even the most irredeemable of people. This case has tasked me a great deal to find empathy for Corey, but I do have some. Corey was a product of her environment.
Yeah.
A lot of the murder cases that I handle, not all of them are psychopaths, but I do find one common thread in all of the homicides that I have handled. And that is the primary maternal disruption. The disruption in your relationship with a maternal figure. It doesn't have to necessarily be your biological mom. Could be, a substitute mother. But if you do not have that influence early in your life, you are not imprinted with the value of human life, the value that human life has beyond you. And I've noticed that in every case, in one way or another, there is a maternal dysfunction. And there that in that maternal relationship, there is a severe dysfunction. I don't have to opine on Corey's maternal dysfunction because you heard about it in the Orange Notebook that is evidence. In this case, the treatment of Corey and her siblings as objects to be handled like chattel, that is apparent and obvious. When you are dealing with a person who is addicted to gambling, everything gets reduced to money. Everything gets reduced to the value it has for your next fix in the gambling hall. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that children are treated as objects, this is where she learns it. And she learns how to treat children as objects, and she goes on to treat her own children as objects, as pawns, to be bartered, to be traded, to be used as bargaining chips with the Richens family. And let me, I want to talk for a second about this. This is important. This was a crime against children, what Corey did. There were multiple victims in this case. She exploited those children and their face and their images for her own ends. She published their picture in a book. She manipulated these children as objects. She locked them in rooms. She manipulated them, their visitation with their paternal grandfather, only when she could get something in trade for time with her children. The fact that she cannot, that the court in this case could not enter an order to protect those children beyond the age of 18, something's got to be changed about that law.
Yeah.
These children are victims. To the extent that you have a YouTube channel or a documentary or a movie that puts these children's faces out on the internet, you are engaging in the same exploitation of these children. You are re-victimizing them. What you are doing is unconscionable.
Yeah.
If you have done this and you know who you are, you need to change that. You are manipulating children for your own exploitive ends, for your own profit. What you are doing is continuing the script of Corey Darden in exploiting her children. And I think my level of disgust for that is probably evident in my voice.
Yeah, she is no doubt a broken pile of genetic goo. So Todd,
that's a very scientific term.
There's certain people that we talk about on the show that I can't class as human, so I got to come up with other words for him because she doesn't raise human being. I mean, she's just a pile of goo. So, we started talking about Eric and the beautiful human being he was and the dad he was. Did you see any kind of lever of manipulation that was her go-to with him, do you think? Because you really dove deep on that pile of goo. What do you think? I know the children were a pile. I mean, not a pile. The children she was using as influence and control in her own life. I mean, she was using everything around her, but was there a go-to that she was constantly going back to that Eric fell victim to? And I only ask for that question too, for other people listening, hey, be wary of this if it happens in your life.
Yeah. The thing that really sticks out for me on that score is just the sort of the emotional distance. I think that you saw Eric very involved, hyper involved, I would suggest. He's coaching all of the teams. Mm. He's got these kids all the time. He's very involved in all of that. I think Corey sees that she's that she wants to have a career in real estate, and so that becomes a substitute for the lack of a completeness that she thinks she's going to get from being married and having children. Remember, these are Corey's words. Corey says that she thought that having children and being married would bring her all the happiness she needed, but it wasn't enough. And so she goes and gets this career, and she thinks that the accumulation of wealth and status and privilege, she thinks that's going to bring her happiness, but it doesn't. It's an insatiable, unquenchable desire that is part of the psychopathic personality. It's just straight down the middle. It's not even it's not even tangential.
I know. It's the total lack of ability. That she never felt joy. I mean, did you ever see or experience anyone on that psychopathic scale that actually could actually have joy, that is actually genuine joy, even in her own children?
The level of psychopathy here is profound.
Yeah.
There is, I think that there is imitation of joy. I think that there is signatures of joy. That's the, you know, the vacation condo, the vacation trip to Greece, the vacation trip here, the glamour of it all, all of the, you know, the makeup and the tummy tucks and the, you know, the day-long spa treatments. Those are all supposed to bring her joy, but none of them do.
Chasing, always chasing.
As she sits in her cell right now, do you think she believes that she's innocent in this?
It's hard to get into that mind.
Yeah.
Now that we all know what I have known for many years, and you, the public, have just become aware of, Corey never left that bedroom that night.
Yeah.
Her children were frantically trying to get in. Think about that for a minute.
Yeah. The horror. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a tough thing even for me now to think about. This is a horrible, horrible thing. So does she think about this in herself? She is the only one who was inside that bedroom for the better part of 8 hours. Before 911 is called, does she have memories from that? I'm quite certain that she does.
Yeah.
I don't believe she has the capacity to wipe that from her mind.
Yeah,
it is not the way the human brain works. You can dress it up. You can put lipstick on it. But it is still what it is. And I've got to think that those memories she is trying mightily, those images, those memories, those sensations, I would think she is trying mightily to eliminate those from her mind.
Yeah, and, finding a way to frame it that's palatable for her to continue existing is what she's probably trying to do there.
Well, she's definitely great at constructs, right?
She is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She wrecks these all over the place. It's about her success in business and about all of these other things that she's just lying about.
I'd imagine she might have said something to herself of, well, it was going to happen eventually anyway. I just hurried it along. Yeah. That's a rationalization of a psychopath.
I think there are all kinds of excuses. Yeah. And then when you heard this feeble defense that Eric was having an affair, maybe there was a homosexual affair. That's a false equivalence. Number one, it's a false equivalence. Number two, it's deflection. It is, he did it too, so I'm okay to do it. And it's perfect narcissism. It's part of psychopathology. It's, again, right down the middle.
Yep.
And it also happens to be false. I investigated whether or not Eric was having an affair of any kind with a woman who he encountered in his workplace. That is false. There was no emotional affair. There was no physical affair, period.
Thanks for making that distinction, too, of not even an emotional affair. Thank you. Good. Keep going.
Yeah, nothing's there, yeah.
There is zero evidence of that. I spoke with this woman who Corey alleged to be having an affair with her husband. Her allegations are false. The idea that Bryce and Eric were engaged in a sexual relationship is laughable. It is despicable. It does damage to Eric's memory. It does damage to Bryce's reputation. It is false. And it is inconsequential to whether or not she killed her husband. They raised this at a trial where the question is, did you kill your husband? The idea that him having an affair of any kind has bearing on that has only a negative outcome on her motivations. The only way that an affair of Eric's could have any effect is to provide her additional motive to murder him.
Right.
I don't understand why the defense thinks this is a good idea. It is false. It is damaging. And it provides another motive for Corey to murder her husband. This idea that she can excuse her own deplorable behavior by accusing someone else of it is a well-known phenomenon, established first on elementary school playgrounds all over the world. You know, I didn't hit him. It was her. And this sort of juvenile displacement is, as an adult, is immature, despicable. It lacks any seriousness with respect to the professional responsibility that should be attendant to lawyers in a courtroom. I think that it is, in the end, it shows, again, the true nature of Corey, and it shows the desperation that must have been present in this defense to raise it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think you could really go any other way as to why they went down some of those roads. Todd Gabler, private investigator, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experiences. You know, I know we were just touching, you know, the surface of the depths to which you went down in this this road, but I think you certainly served Eric well, and you served those kids well. Thank you for what you did for that family and that trial, and thank you for sharing your experiences with us today. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Todd. Amazing.
I was grateful to be of service, and I was grateful to be here with you today. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Give us your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love to hear from you. Links are in the description. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
WTF was that? The sentencing of Corey Richens. Because Corey Richens handed the words, their words to, excuse me, Corey Richens' children handed their words to therapists because they still can't stand in the same room with her. Those words described locked doors, dead animals, a brother sneaking food to his sibling, shut away in his bedroom, and a childhood spent afraid. Every one of them asked for the same thing: keep her away forever. And then minutes later, Corey grabs the mic, stands up in the courtroom, delivers a 40-minute speech, didn't acknowledge a single thing those kids said, but said, you know what? I'm basically going to stalk you. I'm going to call you when you don't want me to. Someday I'm going to get out, and we're going to figure this out. It was a stunning little speech there. Jen, I'm just going to go to you on this. When you saw Corey give her 40-minute diatribe, what was your reaction?
She's not a mother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a monster.
Understatement, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for those mothers out there, there is something that transforms in you. I don't know about as a father, but I can tell you, holding a child, and everything, it's a, I always say, and it's nothing against my husband because I love him dearly, but you never know love until you have a child. There's something about you and your selfishness that dies out.
Yep.
And your first thought is your child. It's a weird, like, umbilical cord connection that you always have. It's weird. It's like you can still feel when they're sad, when they're 300 miles away, and all of a sudden you call and they say, how did you know that this happened? And you say, I don't know. It's like so weird. This is almost a subhuman. But it spoke to what I would have expected. And we'll see what Robin has to say. But it's nothing that they described I wouldn't suspect, because people who do this is who they are and who they have been and the way they treat their children and people around them. So none of us should be surprised, to be honest. Yeah. I would have expected it.
So, Jen, I'm gonna double down on your mother's statements. One of the books I read a couple of years ago by Stephen Pressfield, he's the one who wrote Gates of Fire. He's written many things, and he talked about the Greeks, defending, this is the Thermopylae, the 300 that people have seen in movies and stuff. The ancient Greeks talk about the bravest people in the world were not the 300, it was the mothers. And the mothers of all time, especially during those time periods, because these women willingly gave up their children with those kind of bonds, knowing that they're going to go into battle, knowing that they're going to be given then to the agogi to be trained, and that the bravest people in the world of that time and any time are actually mothers willing to sacrifice and support and do all those things. So hats off to that. And yeah, so when it comes to my impressions of Corey Richens, I'm listening to this. First of all, I was telling Tony before the segment started that she says that word love a lot, and there's no way her definition of love has any resemblance to anyone else's in the world's definition of love, because it's way off for all the reasons you just said, Jen. And then I'm saying to myself, this was not what I was expecting or what you typically expect from a statement, at sentencing. There, again, typically no apology and all these things. You saw very self-centered, very victim mindset, very victim, one of the statements I actually loved, she just basically said how the world's out to get you and they always will. Then she went through this list of people that she didn't lose and lost, but didn't even mention her husband, right? I thought that was interesting. Oh, this is it. Always someone out there to tear you down is exactly what she said. Yeah, if you're an ass, there are. But the thing that really struck me was her narrative throughout this. She had all these themes. And I said, where does someone who is so low on the empathy scale, because she's so high on psychopathy, where does she have the ability to really draw that from? So I did this deep research on it. She has these themes in here. And where her themes are? She couldn't remember it word for word because she had a ghostwriter, but all the themes that she touched on her statement came right from her children's book. She actually copied the children's book. I'm trying to pull up the four things they were. So there's a commonest thing I did. Here they are. So here's the themes that she had in her children's book. And this is what she did right there in her statement. Enduring presence. I will never leave, abandon you despite separation. Never failing love and family bonds. Be like dad. Positive role modeling and resilience and imperfections, mistakes and forgiveness. They make us who we are. That's exactly what she did. And that's what her book was. So she couldn't remember it word for word because she didn't write it. Her ghostwriter did, but she remembered the themes because that's what she's trying to peddle and sell. She put on a show.
It was a performance, as always. Yep. I mean, as it is with all people like that, it is always a performance. And she knew she was taking the stage, and she just kind of had her different numbers that she pulled up. Like, oh, well, we're doing the book today, one of my greatest hits. And that's essentially how she went through it. I found it very telling and very interesting. Her reactions were comical. I thought it was going to be a fairly unremarkable sentencing. It turned out to be very entertaining. Just her constant reactions to everything. It was Donna Adelson-ish in some ways. She's scoffing at the words of her children. She's scoffing at the words of her children's aunts and uncles, the people who are caring for these kids and helping them survive all of this. But then when it came to time for the Corey fan club, her flying monkeys to come up on stage and do their performance.
Oh my God. Her reactions went from the scoffing to just pure, oh, she was soaking that shit in. Because it's probably the last time anyone's ever going to say anything nice about her publicly. And she was just, one of them was about like recipes she left in a crock pot. And they were so delicious. She ate them every day and still makes those recipes. And Corey's like, yes. Oh my God. I mean, this is a woman that operates with the maturity of about a 10-year-old. And I'm thinking, if you really run everything through a filter and you go, well, how's Corey Richens going to react to this emotionally, mentally? It's about that of a prepubescent teen. Not much life experience, very reactionary, and about themselves. And that's pretty much it. Corey Richens was like a 12-year-old girl on the stand. I mean, look at some of the actions that she did as well. I wonder what your reaction is, Jen. And both of you can probably give me some insight into this. Just how far any sort of questioning or points that Corey had made to authorities about people she didn't like. Because what we're finding out now in the charging doc, beyond her speech, was that leading up to the trial, she had all sorts of things that she was trying to deploy. She allegedly put the lead investigator, they made her and her flying monkey. He's allegedly made a dating profile, a fake dating profile on a gay website for the investigator. Again, feels like 1997 and a seventh grader, like doing a gotcha. There were so many other things as well in there that she allegedly did. Calls the FBI on the father-in-law for the guns he was just trying to secure that were Eric's. Calls DCFS on the parents that are watching the kids. She's trying to sick authorities on the people that don't agree with her. When authorities get those sort of calls and they discover they're all coming from the same place, the woman locked up, accused of doing these horrible things, how far do they actually investigate? Or is it at some point just like, yeah, thanks for calling. We'll wait for the next one.
Well, you have to check the box.
Yeah.
Yep. At least follow up and you're going to check the box. And just make sure there's no truth to it. But like I always say, you have to consider your source of information. Uh-huh. At the end of the day, what their agendas are can really come into play on why they're providing the information like this. But the biggest thing this tells me, we are not done with Corey Richens. We are not done with her. Look for shenanigans in prison. Look for her hiring somebody to commit a murder. Look for a lot of hooch to be consumed. Look for this woman to be not out of the investigative limelight and not off of your show anytime soon. It's coming.
She's not gonna. She's a lunatic. She's just a freaking lunatic. I mean, you know. So her desire, it's not even just desire. Her nature, part of her genetic coding to control narratives, knows no bounds because that's all she kept trying to do. So, and your analogy of saying she's like a middle school girl, and I don't want to put middle school girls down because you have one, Tony. And yeah. I mean, you know,
they're more mature.
Hugely much more mature. And I know you have teenagers too, Jen. I mean, everyone's kids are much more than this. This is. Again, an abhorrent abomination of genetic coding. I'm going to go back to that one again because it's subhuman. You know, it's completely subhuman. It's a lunatic. There's like no species on Earth can even come close to this or probably in the universe. It's just like, that's why you got to sit back and watch a show. It's just a show because we've seen this every now and then when we dealt with these crazies in school when we're like in elementary school, not even middle school, right? Where their mind operates that the only way for me to win is to make sure everyone else loses because I suck at everything so bad. I can't elevate myself, so I'll just keep trying to put everyone else down. So I'm going to call the FBI. I'm going to call these people. I'm going to put out all these fictitious narratives out there so I can win by putting you all down. In other words, it's the completely opposite of all ships rise on a rising tide. No, I'm going to put myself on this pillar in the lake. And I'm going to drain the lake and y'all are going to go out the flushed with it. So she's a lunatic.
Wait a minute. abhorrent. I'm writing this down. Abomination of, did you say humanness?
Genetic coding.
Right.
I'm writing it down just for future.
It's my second time this week.
I did it earlier this week because I'm like, that's great.
who was I talking about when I said it the first time? Oh, that was David. Yeah.
Yeah, it was David. Yeah.
It was David.
Yeah. Abhorrent. Yeah, abomination of genetic coding.
Because some people just don't rate the title human.
Yeah.
And you got to come up with something else because, you know, Nutter, yeah, she's a Nutter, but, you know, Nutter's a term of endearment with some of these people at this point. You know, she doesn't even rate that. Lunatic is kind of getting there, but lunatic is can be fun and whimsical, but you took a life, so that doesn't even count. So you got to get grabbed deeper. Soul Ripper, you know, not really there. It's a different category. So yeah, I have all these ones. I'm sorry, I'm digressing.
it really makes me wonder how much worse things actually were in that house.
Sounds bad.
Because look, what came to my mind, and I'm not trying to say anything negative about Eric at all. I'm really wondering what he knew was going on in that household when he was gone at work and Corey was taking care of the kids. And what stories he was being told about how she was caring for them. Because these kids are talking about being locked in rooms, having animals starve to death around them, living in fear. And I mean, that doesn't seem like how Eric was. And the kids seem to have great things to say about dad. And, you know, kids, these are little kids that are describing what, trying to, you know, pull from their experience. And you're probably only getting a fraction of what actually went on. But I'm really wondering what the hell was going on in that house when Eric was at work and she was watching those kids. I'm going to guess probably exactly what she was saying. The kids were inconvenienced. They were locked in rooms. She wanted to be Joanna Gaines for a little bit of time, you know, got animals, wanted to play the farm life, didn't want to care for them. They died. I mean, it sounds like part of my life that I went through because I can believe some of this shit. I learned a lot after I went through a divorce and that person left our lives, my daughter telling me stuff about like what would be going on in terms of when she was being cared for in the morning and like, oh, I was just put in this room and given a bagel every day and I watched storks every day. I'm like, what? What are you talking? Like, that's not what I've been here. And it's like, oh shit. You know, kids can lie about things, but then you start to get into the details. It's like, I don't think they're lying. I think she was handling them and then giving Eric a bullshit story about what life was like when she was playing the role of mom.
And to Jen's opening point on this about she's not a mother, I'm sitting here listening to this. How could she not be on the floor in tears, devastated by what she failed to do as a mother?
She doesn't have that emotion.
Zero context of even trying to understand the context. And even if it was a mistake that you understand what you're... I mean, she should have been on that floor in tears, destroyed that her kids thought of that about her and said she's rolling her eyes. Sorry, Jen, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, not at all. No, I was just going to say this. First of all, it was her children not looking bad. In other words, her children being dressed up in all the pictures we've seen and looking beautiful and all of that. That was very important, I think, for her psyche. And probably the only reason she didn't even do more harm to them. Also, but for her thinking she was going to get away with this, I would have not at all doubted her kids. One of them would have possibly shown up dead in the future. I just wouldn't have. I think this is somebody that thankfully was stopped and caught, because the problem is when somebody gets in your way, that is when somebody like that gets rid of them.
Yep. Did you see the one kid thought that he got some of the fentanyl on him? One of the statements by one of the therapists said that one of the kids said that the one morning I went sick, mommy, it was because I think you actually had some of that fentanyl that you're using on dad on me. I mean, I'm paraphrasing right there, but one of the kids was actually accusing her of accidentally or having fentanyl in his system as well. It was crazy.
Which tracks, because the boyfriend?
Yeah, with the hot dog.
Well, he got really sick too.
Yeah.
Like right before, and the question is like, what did she like? I don't know that it was intentional on Corey Richens' part. if in fact she did poison the boyfriend too and her son. You know, I think that might have been, you know, residue or something.
Doesn't strike me as a hand washer, right?
No, not really.
Like, cross contamination, man.
Germs
in the kitchen.
Flee from me, and maybe germs too.
I made my Moscow Mule and sandwiches over here, but I'm not going to wash my hands when giving my boyfriend and my son their food. And it's just fentanyl. Yeah.
I know. That was an interesting revelation in that case.
It was.
She still holds life insurance policies for two of the kids.
Jen, what?
She didn't care.
Exactly.
That never occurred to mind, somebody like that. She didn't care. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's totally right. That's the answer. Like, that, you're exactly right, because we can go on these diatribes of like, holy shit, can you believe this? And yeah, the answer is exactly that. She did.
That's why it doesn't register. It's why it doesn't register with her, because none of this registered with her. None of it. She does not even, she's not processing any of this as anything but a victim of everyone else.
Yeah. She still has life insurance policies on two of the kids, which is disturbing enough. And, you know, as you were saying, Jen, expect more things from her in prison. Can you, I don't, this is probably a legal question. Can you hold a life insurance policy on your living children while you're in prison? Is there any, I wonder if there's any laws against that, or if the insurance company can say, we're going to cancel this right now.
I think as long as it's being paid on, I don't think there's any law. I mean, I think she can have that. I mean, the question is, who's she going to hire to try to off him? I mean, I am not even.
I agree, because she's going to need money at some point, and she's going to need to find a way to get it. And that's a lever that, if available, could be pulled. Whatever insurance company better be looking for the name Corey Richens on their lists of clients, and maybe make some new choices of who you're insuring.
Don't accept gifts from mom from prison.
No shit.
Oh, my God.
I just want to say, I want her in the same cell as Lori Vallow.
Oh my God!
That'd be great.
That should be a new series, man.
That needs to happen so bad. And then, you know, there's cameras, whatever. That would be very interesting.
I think it's a podcast. I think, you know, that, you know, you just put the two of them in a cell together and you broadcast it, and you charge $5.99 a month to watch it.
Just watch it.
You could fund the entire prison for indefinite amounts of time, because you'd have so many people watching that show. I mean, just, it's like hamsters
Corey
in a cage. The adventures of Corey and Laurie. You do after school specials. It'll be great.
And all proceeds to benefit the kids.
Yeah, I like that. I think it could. It could be.
I'm looking up the life insurance policy thing right now.
Could be a winner right there. All right, that's going to wrap this up. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. Go check out Jen's podcast, Break the Case, wherever you get podcasts, and on YouTube, and go press subscribe. Robin Drake, his latest book, go get this right now. It's Not All About Me. It's available wherever you get books. We'll be sending you an autographed copy, Corey, in the mail.
I will. And yes, you can hold a life insurance policy from behind bars.
Ooh, creepy.
Yeah.
Creepy. Oh, God. I
don't take gifts
kids
from Corey.
Oh, shit. Anyway, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue with there. Until next time, for Robin and Jen and Todd, I'm Tony. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.